We start with a major ruling on Friday from the state Supreme Court as justices struck down the legislative district lines drawn by Republican lawmakers last year as an act of partisan gerrymandering that violates the state constitution. It was a 4-3 ruling with all four Democrats on one side and all three Republicans on the other. The majority ruled that voters have a right to substantially equal legislative representation, and that right is violated when lawmakers draw the district lines to greatly advantage one party over another. In a dissent, Chief Justice Paul Newby argued that partisan redistricting is a political question for the legislature to decide, not a legal question for the courts. Lawmakers now have until February 18th to submit a new set of district lines to a three-judge panel. Those judges will have until February 23rd to approve or reject the new map, but there could still be another appeal to the state Supreme Court after that. According to the ruling, North Carolina's primary is still set for May 17th. Though state election officials have already said the district lines need to be finalized by February 18th in order to hold the primary on that date, we will not get a final ruling before then. Now back to Chapel Hill, where the organization Coalition for Carolina continues to fight against what they argue is partisan interference in policymaking at UNC. The coalition recently held a panel on university governance on campus, and 97.9 The Hill's Ava Pukach has more on that.
The Coalition for Carolina launched in September 2021 to support and defend the University of the People in its independence from partisan interference. The group cited the handling of the Silent Sam Confederate Monument, the lack of a COVID-19 vaccine mandate, and the treatment of journalist Nicole Hannah-Jones as examples of potential interference from state lawmakers. Former UNC Chancellor James Meeser, who led the panel, mentioned the Hannah-Jones controversy when the UNC Board of Trustees initially shed tradition around hiring the award-winning writer.
And we all know the case of Nicole Hannah-Jones, the Board of Trustees' obvious reluctance, clear reluctance, to award tenure. This became a national embarrassment for UNC, and the rest is history.
Paul Fulton, a former member of the UNC Board of Governors and the UNC Board of Trustees, also spoke at the panel. He said he believes UNC is North Carolina's greatest asset, but political interference in decision-making has upended and distracted the campus.
Our universities tell a very complicated story. With world-class highs, and we certainly have a number of those, but we also have some dominating headline lows. And in recent years, the turmoil has risen sharply. The UNC system its reputation has been tarnished.
Former UNC Chancellor Holden Thorpe cited the 2010 election in North Carolina as a turning point in the relationship between North Carolina universities and those who oversee them. Republicans took control of both the state's chambers of the General Assembly, which appoints members to the UNC Board of Governors. That UNC system board then appoints each state university's Board of Trustees. Fulton said the UNC system achieved excellence over time because of great leaders. But to empower those leaders, the university systems need to be an environment and structure that supports them. Fulton said that leadership stems from the members appointed to the board. Of the 24 members on the UNC Board of Governors, only 2 live west of Charlotte, only 3 are people of color, only 5 are women, and 1 is a Democrat.
We must look at the selection process. If it is not depoliticized, the UNC system will be significantly and permanently diminished. Former Board of Governors Chair Lou Bissett said, "This is a diverse state, but we do not have a diverse board."
Belle Whelan is president of Southern Association of Colleges and Schools Commission on Colleges. She said elected boards like the UNC BOG tend to be a popularity contest rather than a more representative depiction of who they serve.
But the bottom line is, it doesn't matter how you're appointed, but you need to work together, and that the institution needs to be put first. The needs of the institution put first, not the needs of the General Assembly, not the needs of the governor, but the needs of the institution. And we expect the board to protect the institution.
The Coalition for Carolina aims to continue examining university governance with a goal of having 100,000 North Carolinians as part of the coalition by the end of the year. Thorpe said more conversations like these need to be had to determine how the university can proceed in the future.
There's a lot of time being wasted arguing over whether something's political or not when it obviously is. I look forward to debating this and many other things. And for all of you who do so much for Carolina, thank you, because it's an important place, and America doesn't work without the University of North Carolina.
For 97.9 The Hill, I'm Ava Pukesh.
Just in, I mentioned at the top of the hour that we've got a little bit of freezing rain in the area, and we do have a winter weather advisory until 10 o'clock this morning. With that in mind, we've just gotten word from Orange County Schools. Today is going to be an optional teacher work day. And no remote learning for students today either. So that just in from Orange County Schools just a couple of minutes ago. Again, no school for Orange County Schools, an optional teacher workday, no remote learning for all students. School buildings and offices are closed. Orange County Schools making that call just about 15 minutes ago in the context of the winter weather advisory. We'll have the full look at weather coming up in just a minute. Another big piece of news from campus. Mike Smith, a longtime dean of the UNC School of Government, has announced he's stepping down from that position at the end of December. He's been the dean there for 30 years, one of the longest serving deans of any school in UNC history. Elsewhere in local news, Chapel Hill Police have announced plans to step up pedestrian safety enforcement in the coming weeks in the wake of several recent incidents, most notably a crash on Estes Drive on New Year's Eve that sent two teenagers to the hospital. On and off-duty officers will be monitoring crosswalks on busy streets and citing drivers who failed to yield. Town officials say 16 pedestrians have been hit by drivers while in marked crosswalks in Chapel Hill just in the last year. You can get a list of upcoming traffic safety initiatives on our website, chapelboro.com. Meanwhile, Chapel Hill officials are also finalizing plans to add bike lanes to West Franklin Street later this year, part of a bike safety initiative that involves both Chapel Hill and Carrboro. Here's Carrboro Mayor Damon Siles on that.
We actually approved in Carrboro a couple years ago a redesign of East Main Street once that resurfacing happens. It's been delayed a couple years because of some budget problems at NCDOT and other issues. But we approved a couple years ago a restriping, a redesign of East Main Street that's going to add bike lanes, reduce travel lanes for vehicles, which I think will make it a safer and more comfortable roadway for pedestrians and cyclists. And it's just going to make it a more thriving, vibrant downtown urban space, which is what East Main Street really should be. Both the timing and the coordination are important. One of the things that's been frustrating for those of us on the Carrboro side of the line for many years is that, for example, the town of Chapel Hill added some great new bike lanes on Rosemary Street several years ago. But if you're traveling west on a bicycle into Carrboro from Rosemary Street, you just could have been dumped out of these great bike lanes in Chapel Hill into a sort of dangerous, all cars, no bikes kind of space on East Main Street. This project in Carrboro will fix that issue. Whatever Chapel Hill decides to do with their concept for West Franklin Street is going to work and coordinate well with East Main Street.
That's Carrboro Mayor Damon Siles there. Chapel Hill officials have until March 1st to choose their preferred design for the new bike lanes. Head to our website, chapelboro.com, to get the full conversation with Mayor Siles, and head there for more local news as well, including a visit to Pittsboro from U.S. House Representative David Price to promote federal infrastructure spending, and the latest from Raleigh on the push for wind power as a clean energy source. Keeping things going now with sports, brought to you this hour by Olmaz Jewelers. First, let's get to the good news. A great weekend for UNC women's basketball as the 24th-ranked Tar Heels rolled over Miami on Sunday, 85-38. Their biggest margin of victory in a conference game since 2007. Carolina led 28-2 after the first quarter and never looked back. Deja Kelly led the way with 18 points. Alyssa Usby added another double-double with 11 points and 10 boards. That's 9 for her. Carolina is now 18-4 overall, with the home game against Pitt coming up this Thursday. Good weekend all around for Carolina Athletics. The second-ranked women's tennis team got a 5-2 road win over number 20 Michigan on Saturday. 24th-ranked wrestling team upset number 19 Pitt at home on senior night Friday. The men's golf team finished 4th out of 19 teams at a tournament in Hawaii, and the 25th-ranked gymnastics team came in 2nd at a 3-team meet in Alabama, upsetting 17th-ranked Western Michigan along the way. But of course, in addition to all of that, UNC men's basketball also had a game on Saturday, and it didn't go so well. With your recap of that, 97.9 The Hill's Michael Coe.
The sold-out Dean Smith Center was feeling good about its chances when the buzzer sounded for tip-off between Duke and Carolina Saturday night. About 5 minutes later, the mood was very, very bleak. A red-hot shooting start from the Blue Devils and early foul trouble on junior forward Armando Bacot snowballed into a 31-8 hole for the Tar Heels midway through the first half. Carolina attempted to rally, cutting the deficit down to 11 points at halftime, but the mountain was too steep to climb, and Duke walked away with a dominant 87-67 win in head coach Mike Krzyzewski's last visit to the Smith Center. Senior wing Leaky Black said afterward the game was decided very quickly.
We got punched in the mouth, you know, right off, right from the tip. It was just, we came out, I guess we thought it was going to be easy. I'm not sure, but we got punched in the mouth, and that's just what it was.
After Carolina fans dreamed of a comeback to begin the second half, Duke freshman wing A.J. Griffin quickly snuffed that out with 10 straight points to begin the period. He would finish with a career-high 27 on 11 of 17 shooting, including 3 three-pointers and a thunderous dunk over graduate forward Brady Manick. Manick said Griffin was just on another level Saturday.
Yeah, he was making a lot of tough shots. He was hitting threes and he getting there in the paint, and he was making some tough ones, contested, off balance. I mean, it's all you can really ask for is to put a hand up and do the best you can. But, I mean, he played really well today, and we just gotta focus more on that and try to get stops.
Griffin took up the scoring mantle for Duke on a night when projected NBA lottery pick Paolo Banchero was relatively quiet, scoring 13 points. But it was Carolina's defense on Banchero which created controversy early. Rather than match up Black with Banchero, head coach Hubert Davis chose to put the bigger Bacot on him. Bacot quickly committed 2 fouls and had to sit for a large majority of the first half as Duke built its insurmountable lead. Davis said the decision had to do with Bacot's size.
One of the things that I was thinking about was with Armando's size, it would limit Paolo to, and he can be successful out there on the perimeter, but limit him out on the perimeter as opposed to posting up.
Carolina is now 0-7 in Quad 1 games this season, with many of those losses being blowouts akin to Saturday night. 3 Quad 1 opportunities remain for the Tar Heels, but all come on the road. First up is the team's very next game, a road trip to Clemson Tuesday night. The Tigers' Little John Coliseum has not always been the friendliest environment for UNC, but if the team hopes to see its season continue into March, failure is not an option. For 97.9 The Hill, I'm Michael Coe.
That game against Temp, Clemson tips off at 6 o'clock. Our coverage starts at 4:30 tomorrow with Countdown to Tip Off. One bit of good news for UNC over the weekend, Armando Bacot got named to the 10-player watch list for the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar Award. That goes to the nation's top center. And finally, in hockey, All-Star Week is over, and the Carolina Hurricanes are back in action tonight. They're on the road at Toronto starting at 7.